Welcome to Cartoonist Kayfabe. My name is Jim Rugg.
I'm Ed Piskor.
I'm excited to dive into this one, Ed. The Marvel Treasury Conan the Barbarian featuring Barry Windsor Smith. But before we do, what's new?
Patreon.com/Ed Piskor. Serializing my Red Room comic strip. Putting two pages up every week at the very, very least. $3 gets you the archive. The entire first issue is almost up there completely. A couple more weeks, it'll be concluded. Right now, I'm working on, I have 3 more pages of issue 4 to go. Every issue, completely self-contained story. You don't need to get bogged down with continuity or any of that sort of thing. Also, there's a Sotheby's auction going down on Tuesday. Their first hip-hop-related auction, and I'm going to have 8 lots of material in that auction. The Buy Me Now version, though, of those auction items can be found in the Ed Piskor Studio Edition, available anywhere. Your comic shop can order it. Go to Fantagraphics.com, and if you must, it is there on Amazon. But about 200 pages of original art, like, you know, shot directly from the original art. And when Sotheby's came a-calling, asking if they could see some examples of things, I shot them a PDF.
That's the catalog.
Yeah, so on Tuesday, September 15th, this auction is going down, 6 p.m.
My latest comic, Octobrion in 1976, world's first blacklight comic, printed with fluorescent ink, is now available at comic shops everywhere. Wherever you get comics, you can find this, although maybe for a limited time, because it is selling well. We just got a big restock order from Diamond, so kayfabe affecting my own comic, Ed. I love it. Thank you all who have picked it up so far and sharing pictures online, social media, and whatnot. I love seeing it out in the wild. I love seeing it under black lights. So you can find this wherever you pick up comics. And if you're interested in the making of and the how-to behind it, there is a process zine available, 350 pages, great detail of what went into making this, available on my website, jimrugg.com.
Task at hand, man. Conan the Barbarian, Barry Windsor Smith, the Red Nail story.
Long overdue.
First published in, it was a Savage Sword of Conan, in crisp, pristine black and white, of which I have no copies. I really want to see what that looks like. I've seen examples printed in, like, the Marvel Abrams book, you know, the history of, but really nice to see it blown up. The color isn't shabby. And this might be one of the best Marvel treasuries.
It's a standout issue for sure. Barry Windsor Smith, you know, kind of made his name on Conan the Barbarian, because at the beginning of Conan the Barbarian, when Marvel started publishing it, the page rates were lower. So they didn't get a guy like John Buscema, whose page rates were higher, and who wanted to do it.
Yeah.
But the money didn't work. So you get a newcomer, a relative newcomer in Barry Windsor Smith, who just did some outstanding work. Like, this is one of those runs that so many collectors, like older generation collectors, would point to when I was coming up as being like a high point for comic art. And Red Nails, the story, there's 2 stories reprinted in here. Red Nails would have been like his last major Conan story. So it's kind of the mature Barry Windsor Smith after doing 20 something odd issues of Conan to start that series off right. This is kind of the climax of it in a lot of ways.
In that period, you know, 2 years of him working on that, which seems to be a special number, like the 2-year threshold is where a lot of creators sort of hit their peak and great runs happen within like these like 2-year periods. He goes from Barry Smith to Barry Windsor Smith, and the art just increases every issue. Something about that monthly schedule, man, it just made him power level to a degree that is very rarely seen in comics.
These stories are adapted, for the most part, by Roy Thomas, including Red Nails, which I think was the very last Robert E. Howard Conan comic that ran in the pulps. You know, it was published in the pulps, but I think it's his last complete Conan story. And
most ambitious. It's the biggest Conan story. Usually these things run, you know, 30, 40 pages. If you are interested in the original adaptation, or the original story by Robert E. Howard, it's printed in the Conan the Warrior paperback. The number is dubious, so don't look at that, because depending on if it's Lancer or, you know, one of these future companies, Ace, the number is different, but it's definitely in Conan the Warrior paperback. You could get that for $2.
Man, so many great Frazetta covers, and then there's a couple that, aren't. We'll put those off to the side there, Leah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so pretty awesome. Obviously, quite a storied history, and I say let's dive in.
Yeah, let's do it.
So Roy Thomas, editor and writer, like I said, adapted most of this stuff, gives some context to what we're seeing here. The first story is Rogues in the House, which is misspelled here on the table of content pages. But nevertheless, this is a story that's reprinted from Conan number 11, I believe, which would be 1971.
And just go through this quick, because it gives quick context to an earlier, you know, this is Barry Smith.
Yeah, one note, though, this is all either colored or recolored by Barry Windsor Smith with Ms. Linda Lessman, who I believe worked with him, you know, in terms of coloring his whole career. You know, when he gets into Storyteller in the 90s, I believe she's still assisting him and doing a lot of, I don't know, maybe the technical part of it. But Windsor Smith colors a lot of his work as time progresses. And I always say, like, pencil, inking, and coloring. If he does two of those three, pick it up. It's worth your time. Probably worth your time if he just does one of them, but he often does color himself, and this whole book is his coloring. So it
inspired a generation, and the generation that was directly inspired picked up a lot of his like weird tics, like these like super close together eyes and these long features. So when we look at those black and white comic books of the 80s, a lot of equine heads, and I feel like it comes directly from a Barry Windsor Smith influence. Peter Laird has it.
One of my favorite coloring jobs of his is the Weapon X comic that ran in Marvel Comics Presents, but you start to see it already here. So Conan climbing through the shadows, we see a purple on him, a flesh tone, the white highlight, and a blue undercolor, and that's just describing his skin tone as he's crawling, you know, out of this dungeon, you know, into this, infiltrating this castle here.
Which seems to be what happens every issue.
Almost a prototype of Machine Man that he would do in the 80s, face-wise. This is a great sequence. So this, like, demonic ape has taken over the kingdom, and now he's fighting the previous ruler's leopard, this purple leopard. What a weird sequence, man. Ape versus leopard to the death. It's perfect for a comic.
These Conan stories, like, I've been checking out more pulp stuff lately, you know, like discovered H.P. Lovecraft some years back, and now I just want to see what the best of pulps were, and went down that Robert E. Howard rabbit hole, man. I picked up one of these Conan books early in the summer, read it over the course of a couple of days, and was like, I need to get me some more of that, man.
It's good reading. Yeah, I went through a similar phase with the Conan stuff, and those early books are pretty easy to read, a lot of fun. This map is drawn by Barry Smith. Kind of weird.
Yeah, it is, but it comes directly, like, in every paperback there's the Robert E. Howard map, and so it's just, you know, extra content, same stuff though.
Yeah,
almost traced it.
Yeah, I was gonna say, like, it's a weird thing to have a credit for, because it really does look identical to that example you showed. But that's how a lot of these, there's a lot of padding in these Treasury editions, or at least, like, you know, pages to make the page counts work. You'll get pinups and different little bits here and there, I think, to round out the page counts. But here we go. This is what we're here for. Red Nails. And I mean, instantly, you can see the line work and the level of detail from a couple of years earlier. This is like 1973-74 is when this is published. Originally in black and white, this was 71. So you can see 2 years go by. And his whole approach, especially to detail and line work, it's almost a different artist.
Yeah, yeah. You know, drawn for black and white, so just really selling us on, you know, the gray values, intense line work, having, you know, these, like, she would have popped, you know, having that black kind of tree right behind her head, pushing her forward like that. A lot of cool textures. Draw every freaking little leaf.
Yeah, every leaf. He's part of the studio, I guess, around this time is when the studio is getting together, he and a few other of these artists that are really working on line work and doing this kind of detail and looking at illustrators and artists of the past outside of comics and bringing those things in.
But also getting into comics because of pulp sensibilities. So everybody was on, you know, Conan's jock.
Conan was a huge hit, and I think it took some people by surprise because, again, it starts out with a lower page rate. Marvel doesn't really know what the reaction's going to be, skyrocketed, man. They're, you know, whenever they do this a couple years after the series starts, they're doing black and white magazines and stuff are spinning out because it's so successful. Love this, supposed to be this dragon, you know, it's a dinosaur clearly, but just love it, man. The detail of that dinosaur coming through and pinning them down.
See, even the religious people could get behind this, man, from a time when humans and dinosaurs roamed the earth together. You know, a couple thousand years ago.
Robert E. Howard on the side of creationists. So the dragon pins them down, and Conan has to use this poisonous fruit to try to defeat this monster that they're fighting. Speaking of, look at this. And keep in mind, like, that's him coloring it. So that really awesome sky that you see there, that whole panel is his work. Yeah. You know, the line work, the composition, the dynamic fight, and then the great coloring.
And what brings Conan here? He's been trailing this girl just because he wants to fuck. Seriously. That's what it's about. He's been trailing her for villages after villages, man. Because he wants a piece. And there he is, like, trying to flirt with her some.
This is really cool. He's cutting, you know, that you see the sword cutting through that mouth. But the panel before that, he, like, grabs her, throws her out of the way. A lot is happening. So, you know, you see the impact here and him going back to stop this charging monster that's coming at them. The monster goes by him, runs into a tree, and basically brains itself. I think it even uses that. Dashes the brains from its misshapen skull as it goes through this tree head first.
That'll learn him.
So they find this city in the middle of the desert. It's not lit up, but certainly Conan's an opportunist, and that's where they're heading. Is all these cities promise riches, right? So they're going to check it out first light, and the city is like red, which is kind of unusual. And there's no sign of any life in the city. It's walled off. The gates are sealed from the inside, even though there's nobody there. It looks like it's an abandoned city, except for the part of it being sealed from the inside.
Turns out to be a city made of jade.
Super valuable. Super valuable. They need a little pocket of this jade would be worth it, and it's a whole city of it. So they're trying to figure this all out, where everybody went, what they're looking at, and they start seeing these other almost ghost-like figures. Very troubling kind of stuff as she follows this ghost-like figure from room to room. Then she encounters him, like, murdered on the floor. Love all the skeletons. It's so awesome looking, man. It has, like, horns coming out of its head, too. And then whenever you see its close-up eyeballs, it's almost a mask, like a skull mask with human face features behind it.
And then it definitely is, you know? Like, they do him in, and it turns out it is just a guy in a costume.
It all looks wonderful, though. This... I don't know what he's even channeling in some of this stuff. You know, like, to me, this is where you start to see these influences that are coming in from outside of comics, because he's doing stuff with line art that you really, I don't know what you would point at in comics that would be similar.
It wouldn't be in comics, but, like, he's the guy that they always talk about when they mention that term pre-Raphaelite. So, right. So whatever that is, Barry Windsor Smith got a couple doses of it.
Look at this sequence, man. The merging of the faces with the skull. It's so great. Even the costume of the guy that was running around like a skeleton. Yeah, super, man. Awesome.
Straight out of Karate Kid.
So this ran in two issues of Savage Tales. And you can see, you know, where the break in the chapters or the two issues would be. And then continuing on with the second part here.
Yeah, we told the girls part of the story as they're inside there. Now we have to see where the heck Conan was the whole time. A lot of drawn on every page, man.
Yeah, he's making a ton of marks. I always think when we look at artists like this, of doing almost like a two-week subset where it'd just be like all of Barry Windsor Smith's career, because it is fascinating. He has great high points even before he gets into what we think of as the style of him. You know, before he takes on Conan, he's sort of bouncing around doing Avengers and Daredevil issues, and it looks really great. It's very much in a Jack Kirby tradition, and he certainly finds himself.
Boom!
Oh, man! Let's do a quickie through this.
Go ahead.
So this is one of those Avenger issues, and you can see channeling Jack Kirby. Some of his own idiosyncrasies, but it reminds me of Steranko in that way, too. Mm-hmm. You know, another artist that certainly becomes his own guy, but shows up with that big Kirby influence. And if you read interviews, both of those guys will talk about Kirby and how important that stuff was. It's so cool.
Yeah, man. Like, working from Marvel Method, so it's him kind of telling the story that he wants. And you could tell that even that's unconventional with the amount of panels and these, like, long, tall panels. Yeah. Like, it, you know, is he the guy who brought the long, tall panel into comics?
This kind of, like, these kind of color squares and stuff is something that you'll see in the backgrounds of his work as it gets into the Machine Man's and the Weapon X's. You know, something that has, like, the inside control panels, you'll see that kind of look. And I think that is something that some of the Image guys pulled out, some of those backgrounds. Yeah, that's fun stuff. But there, you know, like I said, like, you follow his career, and it's there are several of these chapters where you can almost distinctly see the different styles from the different eras. It's incredible, the line work that he's putting on these pages.
This is a quintessential Conan story too, because it has all the stuff that one associates with Conan. A lot of cloak and dagger, betrayal, evil kings, skull warriors.
Use of color to indicate, you know, like the flashback kind of stuff, the history stuff. And then I was pointing out a minute ago in Avengers, the square, colorful backgrounds. You see that here, where it's almost these psychedelic backgrounds. They're not square-shaped, but it's that same thing of, you know, using color, and maybe it's because he is the colorist that he's applying that kind of approach, but it really adds a little bit extra to this art, I think, that he colors it himself and has some ideas of using color narratively. It would be a fun exercise to compare that first story to the original colorist. Again, you can see kind of like him playing with these like weird colors in the background. Really great against like a light bluish gray foreground figure, having that color in the background to make it separate a little.
He wasn't shy about using the colors that every other colorist at the time fully would not use, because they were kind of, you know, they're olive colors and they don't pop or anything, but like applied strategically, they make all the sense in the world.
One of the things I noticed when I was reading Robert Howard's Conan's is they're pretty violent.
Yeah.
You know, it's pulp tradition, so you get to see some of this where Conan's cutting through these warriors and just covered in blood in the aftermath, just standing around like conversing with his mates, and he's just covered in blood.
That's Vigil blood, you know, but it's black blood.
More of that pattern, that color pattern background. That's a motif that comes through in a lot of his work.
Yeah.
And it's pretty odd to see it in Conan. It makes sense whenever you're in the professor's evil underground lab. Less so here.
Very easy.
Incredible, man. That is incredible. Yeah, the monsters, the dragon stuff. This is a, as you say, quintessential kind of Conan piece. And, you know, it's his apex for Conan, I think. I think most people would agree with that.
It even says in the back of the treasury here that, you know, Barry, like, don't expect to see much comics from him for some time, man. He's doing lithographs and paintings and things. See, these are like the olive colors that no colorists in comics were really using. But when you apply strategic lighting to them, it makes sense that this would be, you know, this is Caucasian flesh in the shadow.
This is a great composition where it's just slightly tilted. Has such an epic feel, like you're walking in on something that isn't right.
Very nefarious, man. And of course, another quintessential piece, the damsel in distress, ready, about to get sacrificed to the gods.
Yeah, not just Conan. Like, this is Pulp 101.
Yeah.
The hero arriving.
I love this character. Like, that is, I mean, if you told me Barry, I think Bernie Wrightson was fucking around with those. Like, was he part of the studio?
I think so, yes.
Yeah, like...
Yeah, it feels like it. As soon as you say Bernie Wrightson, that feels exactly like something out of a Bernie Wrightson sketchbook.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the close-up's even more grotesque.
Right.
I don't even know why it's like that. Just no neck. This is your Barry Windsor Smith flourish. That's something that a writer's not coming up with.
It feels bright, too. Like, you playing around with that shitty four-color process, and even on this yellow old paper, it still sells the brightness of that moment.
Great showdown coming with this monstrous character. And, I mean, this is Rune almost.
Right.
You know, that we would see him in the 90s. Like, this is stuff you can still trace that line almost exactly to his 90s work. More of that glow, capturing light almost impossible, and you know, something probably those guys are thinking about and working on together. A little homage to Robert E. Howard. And then this extra material is almost worth it itself, depending on, I guess, how much you spend on this, on your copy of this treasury. But it's very nice and insightful and really gives some context both to Barry Windsor Smith, his history, and Conan in the comics. Black and white, love it.
Yeah, and let's end on that pinup on the very back, because this is, you know, Barry Windsor Smith at his most graphomaniac. It has that like psychedelic 70s.
That could be a neon sign.
Yeah,
and if it's not, it's a shame. That should be a neon sign, is what I should say.
And that's just his signature.
Yeah, it's great. All of the rain, all the different colors too, like the blue highlights hitting his side. And again, covered in that blood. It's great stuff.
Yeah, it feels like a Frazetta-type composition with the guy, you know, sort of menacing on top of a horde of villains.
It's a beautiful piece. I'm a big Barry Windsor Smith fan, and in a lot of ways, like, to me, this is where he really comes into his own around this time period, at least for the stuff, you know, like, I come to him in the late 80s and early 90s, where he is much more at this stage than in the early Conans. But man, I ate this up. And I love these Marvel treasuries are so great at the oversize. Some work better than others. Barry Windsor Smith's super detailed artwork works great in this oversized format. Really shows it off. It almost feels like it's made for this.
Totally. Totally. Still interested in looking at the black and white. So,
yes.
So kayfabers, hit up the P.O. box if you got a spare copy or two. But absolutely. Like, one of the great treasury editions. Not going to be the last Treasury edition that we talk about on this channel. Not going to be the last Barry Windsor Smith work that we talk about on this channel. But we do have to get to making those videos. So let's get the heck out of here, Jimmy.
Wrap it up.
Kayfabers, like, follow, subscribe to the YouTube channel. Hit the bell. We'll notify you when the next videos are available. We are on that race to 30,000 subscribers. Make that happen for us. Octobriana is in stores right now. Limited copies left, man, so get them while they're hot, while you have the chance, because you're going to regret it when you have to pay $50 on eBay to get them shits. Red Room is being serialized on my Patreon, patreon.com/edpiskor. $3 gets you the archive. Sotheby's Auction House has their first hip-hop auction going on. Tuesday is the day the live auction happens, September 15th. Hammers come down at about 6 p.m. Links below this video to see the various lots of original hip-hop family tree artwork available there.
You can subscribe to the Cartoonist Kayfabe e-newsletter at the link below this video to keep up with everything we're doing. You can find Cartoonist Kayfabe t-shirts and merchandise at the links below this video.
Jimmy, give these guys their marching orders.
Read more comics.